Yes, I am Akilah Shirelles. I'm the executive director of the Community Self-Determination Institute. I'm a former member of the Grape Street Crips out of the Jordantown Housing Projects here in Watts.
Sorry.
Let me just turn it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, could you tell me what were you doing when the area riot broke out? What you saw, what you hear, what you heard?
What I was doing during the breakout of the early LA riots was actually working with an organization that we co-founded with Hall of Fame great Jim Brown called AmeriCan. And at the time, we were actually organizing in the neighborhood the peace treaty. The peace treaty happened a few days before the actual Rodney King verdict. So we had actually took about 250, 275 gang members, ex-gang members, from seven different neighborhoods throughout the city of Los Angeles down to City Hall to make a presentation to let them know that we had formed a peace treaty, that we were coming together to atone for the violence that we've perpetrated on ourselves and against each other, and that we were making a commitment to stopping a lot of the killing in the city. And I think the following day was the Rodney King verdict. And, basically what we were doing in the neighborhood was trying to stop individuals from looting and robbing and burning down the stores and different things like that, because we were trying to let them understand that this is our community. This is where we live at. So whatever we destroy here, we lose.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I thought a lot of African-American gang members who become part of the riots, that was my understanding. So I thought you are part of the riots.
No, actually, we were the individuals who were out trying to stop individuals from looting and robbing and stuff, you know. Now, once it got so big, you know, we saw that we couldn't control it. Law enforcement stopped coming into the neighborhoods. Then we kind of like just laid back. And you could also, you know, Jim Brown, there's a brother named Batman from one of the original members of the East Coast Crip Gang. There's a couple of documentaries on him. Even had brought Jim Brown down to the neighborhood. And so Jim was also in the neighborhood, along with some of the key, you know, members who organized the peace treaty, trying to stop individuals from looting and robbing. But once, like I said, it got out of control, my brother Daoud, told Batman that it was really time to get Jim out of there and everything, to take him back to the house, because, it just had totally got out of control. The participants of the riots were community people who saw an opportunity to take advantage of, of the system in a certain sense. There's a lot of poverty, that exists in urban communities in this country. And, the riots broke out, in several major cities across the country, because of the Rodney King verdict. And, we were also running programs up in Vegas. The same thing was happening there. But, many people felt like that the system had taken advantage of them. And, people aren't, neighborhood folks aren't really sophisticated to a certain extent about understanding how government works and who's with this and who's not with that. So stores, supermarkets, shops, people saw it as a free fall. Here's a chance to go in and be able to, get some goods and some things that we feel like we need.
Well, there are some people, like Korean Americans, that are one of the targets or victims, and they say we become victimized because we lost their jobs and nobody came to help us. But on the other end, there are other people saying, Korean Americans are like occupiers. They get money from us, so they deserve what they got. So what's your opinion about that?
Well, I'll tell you, right on the corner of Slauson and Van Ness, there was a Korean a liquor store owner who His store was on the corner, and it was in an L-shaped building. They burned down his store, and it burned down my father's restaurant as well. So, and I'm saying that to say that, you know, you're absolutely correct. A lot of people lost their businesses, not just Korean-Americans, but also African-Americans, Latino-Americans. Many people lost their business as a part of the riot. It wasn't directed towards any specific person. You take somebody like Mr. Lee, you know, who owned Watts Market. Mr. Lee's store got burned down, and people in the neighborhood love Mr. Lee. And since then, Mr. Lee has rebuilt. He doesn't have a market anymore. Now it's a laundromat. But Miss Lee and Mr. Lee are over there all the time. You know what I'm saying? Somebody spray painted on the wall, and it was in the on the front page of the Metro section, L.A. Times. You know, sorry, Mr. Lee. You know, because people really love Mr. Lee because he took a real, you know, he supported the community heavily. And now you have some other individuals, you know, Korean Americans, African Americans, Latino Americans, who did nothing for the community, who bled the community, who treated people like trash, and they take their money and they go back to their homes. And they never return. Miss Ford, who owned the liquor store right across the street from Watts Market, right across the street from the Jordan Down House Projects as well, they burned her store to the ground and looted her store. And nobody wrote, sorry, Miss Ford, and she was a black woman. Because people felt like she didn't have any respect for the community. So it's not so much, it wasn't about, you know, the riots wasn't about, you know, any particular group. It was about a dynamic that happened in the country. Major urban cities in this country are powder kegs because there are few jobs, you know, there are few, you know, the education system is terrible. There's terrible, you know, the LA city of Los Angeles has a housing crisis and has had one for years. But yet, you know, there's a large influx of immigrants that are coming into the country. And then at the same time, there's a lot of racism that plays into laws and how things are actually done. African-Americans have been here, you know, forever to a certain extent. And then it can't qualify for some of the loans that Korean-Americans qualify for, you know. It has nothing to do with the Korean-Americans. It's racism in the banking system. You know, it's predatory lending. There's all different types of stuff, you know. So therefore, some people might target the Korean Americans and say, hey, you know, you guys are predators in our neighborhood. But there's good and bad on both sides. You know, I wouldn't say that folks specifically targeted, you know, the Korean, you know, American business owners to just rob and loot their store. In some cases, like the swap meets and stuff like that, they know that that's where all of the goods are, you know. So if you're a robber, you know, if you're a criminal, that's where you're going to go, you know, because that's where you can access all of the goods at. It ain't got nothing to do with the people. It has to do, those are the goods, and that's where I'm going to go get it.
I know, but I'm just repeating the same question, but it's the last question on that issue, because this is one of the key issues, and I'm hearing with different opinions from other people. So, for example, I interviewed an African-American person the other day, and then he said, I was like, oh, okay, so this is like a class issue between haves and have-nots. And then he's like, well, actually, the focus at Korea, there is conflict between Korean Americans and then African Americans. And then the riots, from the first day, they, you know, after they heard the verdict of Rodney King, mm-hmm. They started burning stores from the first day. You know, they targeted Korean stores. So he said there is tension between Korean Americans and African Americans. What do you think about that?
Well, I think we have to take a critical look at they. Who are they? Who? Rioters. Yes, rioters. But who are the rioters, though? I mean, can we identify the rioters specifically? Can we say that they were African Americans? Can we say that they were Latinos? Were people arrested, you know, for robbing those stores? Mm-hmm. Okay. So what was the I mean, were they a part of organizations that targeted the store, or were they individuals who were criminals who were just angry, you know, because of the problems that they have in their own life, projecting their fear and their anger onto these individuals, you know, be it Korean Americans, African Americans, or Latino Americans, that got their businesses burned down. Of course, there were problems in the community with, you know, some African Americans and some Korean Americans. There was Latasha Harlins, who was shot in the head, for fighting, with the Korean woman in the store. There has been, the media takes those type of situations and totally blows them out of proportion. Every channel you turn on, they are looking, because they sell newspapers, they sell stories, So they're going to blow all of that stuff out of proportion. But now what's the reality of it? Because, see, I don't accept everything that I see on television or read in the newspaper. And I don't like to generalize things, because I think when we generalize things, it becomes really dangerous, So, of course, individuals are going to say, yes, there's a lot of problems with African Americans and Koreans. Yes, but at the same time, there are a lot of positive, beautiful relationships between African Americans and Koreans. Like I said, Mr. Lee introduced me to Mr. Kim, who owns the liquor store right on the corner of Stocker and Crenshaw. Mr. Kim was the head of the Korean Grocers Association. They pulled together about 15 Korean businessmen, and they all came up to Jim Brown's house. I was a part of the Black Korean Alliance, helping to kind of like protect the interests of the Koreans, because there were individuals there who wanted to make the Koreans pay for stuff that wasn't their responsibility, and this was in the mayor's office. So although there were examples of relationships, of bad relationships between African Americans and Koreans, there were also a lot of examples that the media never focused on and never promoted, because it wasn't in their best interest. It doesn't sell newspapers that were out there that were not focused on. So, I believe when you throw people in a mix, in a mess, like, urban America is, urban America is a war zone. I mean, over the past 15 years alone, let's talk about gangs. There's been over 15,000 gang-related deaths. You're talking about people, I would say probably two-thirds of South Central Los Angeles has been incarcerated or had some type of incarceration. The kids and the adults in these communities suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder and hypervigilance. This is a war zone. It literally is. If South Central Los Angeles, many parts of the city weren't in the United States, there would be humanitarian aid in here helping people to deal with the after effects of war. There would be peace envoys here, because America, sometimes doesn't pay attention, to its poor. And many of the Korean Americans that come in this country come here with nothing, and they work hard just like the next person in order to put themselves in a position to be able to sustain themselves and their families. And sometimes when people see, this individual has a liquor store, they think that these people are making millions of dollars. They don't understand the business, of running a market. They don't understand that you're making 1 and 2 cents markup on canned foods and, 5 cents on a bag of potato chips. They don't understand the details. They don't analyze the details of any of those things, They just think that people are making millions of dollars, because they might drive a nice car and different things like that. I mean, I deal with the same thing here all the time, as well. People don't stop to try to really understand that. And it's really a result of the pain and the anger and the frustration that we feel in our own lives. America doesn't have a collective idea of success. Success is an individual conquest in this country for the most part. And it's like any type of expression, of authentic feelings or emotions is denied. It's a taboo in this country. It's to suppress any type of, authenticity. So how do you begin to mend relationships between people, between classes, between races, when you have a country that is in total denial about everything, you don't. I think that sometimes it's a benefit to some that riots happen, because then they get an opportunity to steal the money. Millions and millions of dollars poured into the city of Los Angeles to rebuild the city. Millions of jobs were all promised, all kinds of stuff. None of that stuff came through. Rebuild Los Angeles, all these organizations that popped up, millions and millions and millions of dollars were stole. And that's a game, you know, just like war. War is profit, you know, for those who are selling the weapons, for those who are bandaging hospitals, drugs, companies, all of these folks, they make money off that type of stuff, you know? And we have to look at the economics of something like that happening, you know? Believe me, I think that, you know, partially, and, you know, you might call me a conspiracy theorist, I think that the riot was almost planned to a certain extent.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think so?
Well, I think that that there are people who know the state of tension that exists in the city and in urban communities. You know, when you take away people's jobs, you know, when you tell them that once you commit a crime that you can never work again, you know, you deny them opportunity even though they've paid their debt to society. When you deny them, you know, quality housing, a proper education. And I'm not saying that, and I'm saying that those things are available. However, people believe that it's not available. Just like you go around in Watts. Watts is a very beautiful community compared to other places around the world. I mean, I just came from Bali a couple of days ago. Poverty in Bali is not poverty in the United States in any way. None. People in this community believe that they have nothing. They believe that they're poor because they don't appreciate what they have. You know, there's so little gratitude for what you have in this country that it's ridiculous. We're spoiled, you know, and at the expense of the whole world, we have this thing that we call freedom, you know, but it's tokenism almost, really. So it's like there are people who understand this, you know, they understand the psychology of scarcity mentality to a certain extent, because that's what people suffer from here. It's not that they don't have, they believe that they don't have, you know. I mean, that's why you have so much, you know, like obesity, you know. People are malnourished as opposed to really not having enough to eat. I mean, we throw away more food than some countries have in the whole year, you know. But we still have big poverty programs. A lot of these programs, the mission program has been in business for 20 years. You know what I'm saying? They're almost like poverty pimps. You know, it's a business. They're running a business. You know, the mission is not to really feed people. It's a business. You know, it's a way of making money. It's like everything is about money. Everything is about money. So, you know, my belief is that you have officers. I mean, and I'm not saying that the officers beating Rodney King, that happens every single day. You know, the only time I've ever been to prison was I got jumped by some police in the projects for nothing. You know, for nothing. So I could have had a Rodney King case and a 3-4 dozen other people that I know. The thing was that it was captured on video. And you see, those individuals got that. They promoted it. It's on every single channel. Every time you wake up, every time you turn around, they're showing it over and over again, because what they were doing is, in, you know, pumping the fear, you know, and bringing out the anger and the rage in the people behind something like that happening. Then they set up a court case that's clear. I mean, it's clear that these individuals were in the wrong, and then they let them go. What is that about? I'm like, come on now. You know, it's almost like, you know, you agitating something, you know? It's like, you know, it's this whole, you know, it's that old theory, you know, of divine and conquering, you know? It's like, I'm like, why would they do something like that when they already know, they know the truth. The truth is right there in the writing. Who cares that Rodney King was speeding, you know, doing 80 miles an hour? He still didn't deserve that type of beating, you know, and everything. I mean, that was uncalled for. It was uncalled for, you know. He broke a law, you pull him over, you write him a ticket, you let him go. You don't beat him, because that has nothing to do with, you know, just like this other guy. There was another situation not too long ago. A guy in Compton was in an alleged stolen car. He got out, he ran, you know, the helicopter and everything. Once they caught him, you know, and apprehended him, then they beat him. And I'm like this, that's that officer taking out his own frustration and anger about maybe his own personal life onto this individual, you know. And I'm like this, that means that we're not giving our officers the proper training that they need, because they're out there with a whole gang of stress and fear and everything is well. So, you know, it's all centered around this fear. And there's people who understands this type of fear and despair that exists in the community, and they pump it, you know? So, and they know it's a powder keg. I mean, you know, it's like, you know. So I think that that sometimes things are planned, you know, and, you know, that you pit people against each other, you know. Yeah.
What about a lot of people saying the LA riots was like a civil rights movement or people, something really positive, something that, whatever it's a conspiracy or not, whether it's planned, anyway, the how... You know, a lot of African Americans or Latinos or poor people who are part of the riots, like they try to declare something, try to say something. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that that people were trying to say something. I mean, they were crying out for help in the only way that they know how, in the only language that they know how, through violence. Because that's what this country is actually built on violence. You know, our foreign policy allows us to go around the world and destroy the lives of other people in the name of democracy, in the name of freedom. You know, so I think that, you know, what the people in this country and you know, in the riots were trying to say was that, you know, see us. Provide some services to us. You know, we're the taxpayers. We're the people in this country, and we get nothing. You know, we've sacrificed our lives. We are in debt to the federal government. Our children's children's children, you know, will still be paying off this debt. But yet, when we talk to our politicians who, you know, who don't represent us, they represent special interests and big business. It's like, you know, we can't get anything. They're cutting all of our services. You know, like I said, you know, they steal all our money, you know, through purchasing books that are outdated. Our water system is shot. You can't even drink water out of the faucet. I mean, the quality of life is ridiculous. So I think that people were reacting to something, you know. I don't believe that it was like a civil rights movement. Because the civil rights movement, I mean, although it came out of an incident, it became a planned, orchestrated, you know, movement. It was a strategic approach to try to shift something within the culture. Whereas the riots was like it was a reaction to something that happened.
So, what kind of lesson do you have we can learn from the riots?
I think the lesson is that we have to invest in human capacity. We have to spend more time in helping people to learn to love themselves, to have greater compassion for their own life, to see, to begin to practice love, I mean authentic love, to learn how to forgive. To shift our whole perception of how we see, you know, humility and vulnerability from weaknesses to actual strengths. So I think that, that you know, one of the major things that we can learn from the riots is that we have to invest in helping people to bring balance to the wounds in their personal life. Because that's what I saw it was. Those officers wailing on Rodney King.
So we are talking about lessons we can learn from the riots.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, one of the major lessons that, you know, we need to take away from the riots is that there's a wound, a deep wound that exists within this culture that needs to be healed. You know, just looking at the officers who beat Rodney King, I mean, clearly it was uncalled for, and I think that it represented the anguish, you know, and the fear and, you know, the sadness that they have in their own personal lives. And we saw it projected onto this other human being. The fact that Rodney King was on drugs and that he was driving. I mean, you know, people don't just smoke drugs just because, I mean, you know, drugs is only a symptom of a deeper rooted problem. And that is rooted in individual self-esteem as well as a spiritual disconnect that's taking place in our own personal life. The fact that our judicial system is broken. And that it's been riddled by racism, you know, forever. I mean, black people in this country has never had any protection from the law. When we perpetrate crimes against each other in a neighborhood, law enforcement don't investigate it. And up until, what, the 60s, you know, we could never even get a fair trial in court. I mean, so we had no protection, not from ourselves or from the court, because they prosecuted us wrongly as well. So Rodney King, there was no way that Rodney King could get a fair trial going up against, you know, the police department, which is one of the strongest lobbies in this country, you know, and especially in the city of Los Angeles. I mean, they make a lot of decisions and, you know, they command a large percentage of the public safety budget, you know, in the city of Los Angeles. So that was almost, that was crazy. And then also people taking out their frustration and anger on innocent bystanders, you know, is also another example of the you know, just the wounds, the deep wounds that exist in our own personal lives that we project on others. You know, whether it be black on Korean, whether it's Korean on African-American, Latino on black, black on Latino, Latino on Korean. I mean, however you spin it, it's all a part of that original wound that has taken place in our own personal lives that we have never brought balance to. So I think that the real lesson is that how do we begin the healing process? How do we begin to ask those critical questions that would make us comfortable enough, that would make us vulnerable enough to express really what's on our heart? And then, you know, do we actually have the ability within this city, within this country, to hold space for the hard truths that we will hear? You know, so I think that that, you know, that's one of the real lessons that we have to learn from the riot.
Right. Well, although you say the riots was not targeted to any specific group, you know, I've been talking to Korean Americans, I've been talking to African Americans and Latino Americans, and it seems like although the riots is about, like, you know, targeted all the businesses, including Latinos and African American, Koreans, whites, also there are some people who targeted Korean Americans, especially African Americans. And I talked to leaders of African Americans, and they say, you know, Koreans, blah, blah, blah. There is tension, and Korean Americans say the same thing. So what's the situation now? You said, you know, we need to bring some positive stuff. Is it the situation between, you know, African Americans and the Korean Americans has gotten better?
I'm not really involved with the Black Korean Alliance anymore. Because it was really a political thing, you know, it happened to, like, take care of the politics, because nobody really cares about, I mean, I would say nobody, I do, but the system doesn't necessarily have the time nor the interest in trying to really discover what's at the root, you know, of this pain. A lot of the Korean Americans that come to this country come out of war-torn situations. I mean, if we look at the history of what America did in Korea, I mean, I mean, man, we could say a whole lot of stuff, actually. So the fact that that Korean Americans are here, I think that still, you know, within their own bones, they still hold a lot of, you know, maybe anger and sadness, you know, from what they saw, you know, happen to their country, you know, perpetrated by us. And then the image of the black man in this country, we don't control our own image. Our image is projected around the world as either some exotic, you know, oversexed, individual or the murderer, the criminal, or the martyr. That's the image that people have of black people worldwide. And when folks come here, there's a lot of racism. There's a lot of racism within this system, you know. In order for you to assimilate, to be a part of American culture, you got to be as far from black as you possibly can, you know. So we're the scapegoat for everybody's problem, you know. If you're Asian, the closer you are to white, assimilating into, you know, white American culture, the better you are. If you're Latino, the closer you assimilate into white American culture, the better you are, you know. Black people can't assimilate into nothing because we black. The racism is because of our skin color, you know, and we can't do anything about that, you know, for the most part. And I think that, have things gotten better? Probably not. Because I don't see any deep dialogue and conversations that's taking place about bringing balance to the wounds in our personal life. You know, I think that, you know, Koreans as well as black folks have a lot of wounds. You know, and I know, I mean, our history in this country, I mean, 400 years of slavery, another 100 and some years of Jim Crow. I mean, up until 1968, man, we couldn't even own an estate in this country. You know, and I mean, we're still blamed for everything. You know, Clinton just, you know, during the 90s, repealed all of the civil rights legislation that black folks fought, man, gave their life for. You know, so it tells you how much, you know, and then people still say, you know, what do black people want? What do we want? I'm like, man, we want to be taught to love ourselves, you know, and that be okay. Because as soon as two or three black people get together in one place, oh my God, they like, you know, that's almost a crime. You know, and if a black person stand up and starts saying that, you know, I love black and we need to get together as black people, they call that racism. Because, you know, we live in a very sick country, you know. The only freedom that exists in this country is freedom to pursue money at the expense of all others. That's what freedom is in America. Freedom is being able to choose from 14 different deodorants, 25 different type of toothpastes, you know. That's what freedom is in this country, which is ridiculous. But there's no real freedom to love yourself. I mean, that's an individual quest. And if you try to organize individuals around that type of love. Oh, this is a good guy.
Hi.
This is Daoud.
Hi, how are you?
This is Mae Kim. She wanted to do, I don't know if you have time.
Well, I gotta go. I'm so sorry. I have another appointment. I should have, I wish I could have interviewed you.
Okay,
but,
okay.
You ain't going nowhere, are you?
Yeah. I'm
But I gotta tell you about this little stuff. I just talked to Howard Yule on the phone, man. I was telling you, man. But I gotta tell you about this because we gotta go over here to Myron Cotton's office so that we can set up a meeting with.
So this might be a little bit tough question, but I'm just trying to get all different perspectives. I'm asking tough questions. It's just.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, it's good. I like it.
Okay, great. So, what about you brought up racism among Korean Americans or new immigrants because there is racism all over the world,
yes,
created by America, whatever, right, mm-hmm, against the African Americans or black people. But what about Americans, including African Americans, seeing new immigrants coming, you know? Do you have racist attitudes against Korean Americans or other Asian Americans?
Absolutely. There's a lot of racism. You know, racism is ignorance. You know, prejudice means to prejudge. You know, you prejudge a lot of the things. I mean, you know, most people in this country, they dislike and they fear what they don't understand. And, I mean, it's the same attitude with Latinos Americans, you know, that live here. It's the same thing. It's like this whole scarcity mentality thing that I talked about a little earlier is what actually kind of triggers it. There's a belief that there's not enough, you know, when there's really an abundance of things. But that's how people are actually conditioned and programmed in this country, that there's not enough. So when you see another group that comes in, you know, you got all these vacant, you know, buildings and stuff in the African-American community. Korean-American sees an opportunity. They open up a business. They open up a market, a store, you know, whatever kind of business. You know, folks is like, why they get the money to do that? You know, but or yeah, these Koreans are taking over the neighborhood. I mean, and it's ignorance. That's all. It's just ignorance and it's scarcity mentality. There's enough room for all of it to happen. You know, Bali is an interesting culture in that, you know, it's a collective culture. I mean, there's about, you know, 50 art galleries right on the same block. You know what I'm saying? All of the silver stores are all on the same block. You know, all of the stonemasons are all on the same block. All of the wood carvers are all on the same block, you know, because they see competition as a good thing, whereas in this country, we see it as negative. You know, our value system in this country is all messed up, you know, and I wouldn't assign it to any group of people. We're all like that, you know, so it's you can't really kind of like point the finger and say, you know, like black people are racist towards Koreans, or Koreans are racist towards black people, or Mexicans are, you know, racist towards El Salvadorians. It's a conditioning process that exists within this country, you know, and basically it's bigger than that as well. It's Western philosophical thought. That's what it is. You know, it's a construct that has been given to us that's based upon a racist view of the world. And it's like, it's based upon duality. Good and bad. Well, what's the balance between good and bad? If there's only good and bad, then there's no balancing and there's nothing to balance these two, then you're going to get stuck all the time because you're going to always be looking to judge somebody. You're going to be able to make somebody right and make somebody wrong. You know, and it's like, that's, you know, I had a conversation with a woman who did an interview on us, and me and my brother, and, you know, she was caught up in that duality. She wanted to make somebody wrong. You know, the gang member is wrong. You know, the victim is wrong. And I like to explain it like with this whole, like with the idea of domestic abuse. You have a man who's beating his wife, and you have a woman who's taking a beating and staying there. Who's wrong? Now, the judicial system is saying, we're going to lock the man up as if that's going to solve the problem. Because as soon as he gets out, she's going to go right back to him in most cases. You know, they'll lock the man up and then they'll give the woman, like, you know, shelter and all of this stuff like that to so-called protect her. No. Somewhere along the way, in their conditioning process as a kid, he learned that it was right to beat his woman into submission. And somewhere in her conditioning process along the way, she learned that taking a beating meant that somebody loved you. If you're going to bring balance to that situation, you know, it's not, I don't think that, you know, that you need to prosecute anyone first. I don't think you need to prosecute anyone. So follow what I'm saying. I don't think that you need to prosecute anyone. I think that both individuals need help. They both need counseling.
But they need help. But I don't want to go.
So and see, but this is it's a hard thing for people to understand because it's a part of the duality within this culture. Somebody always has to be wrong in this culture, you know. And this is what this whole thing that I'm also talking about with the riot, you know. Koreans felt like they took the brunt of the pain. And it's not necessarily true. African Americans feel like they took the brunt of the pain. And it's not necessarily true. Mexican Americans, Latino Americans feel like they took the brunt of the pain. And it's not necessarily true. We've all suffered. We've suffered in our own homelands. And we suffer even more in this country based upon this whole dual concept. Because it has no balancing pole in it. It has no measure of bringing healing, you know what I'm saying, to the wound. You can't heal the wound by making it bad because you're judging it, you know. You're already defining it as such. So I'm not condoning, like, this example of domestic abuse. I'm not condoning what the man has done. And I'm not condoning the woman for staying there and being beaten. I'm not saying that any of those is right. I'm not judging it at all. I'm saying that they both need therapy. They need counseling. They probably need to be separated so that they can begin to deconstruct the conditioning process that told them that that was okay. That's what needs to happen in their lives. Locking a person up in jail doesn't solve a problem. And there's a thousand studies, a million studies out there that proves it. It hardens a person and it makes them worse. There's people who understand that. That's why they do it.
So if you talk about the LA riots or whole society, you are saying, you know, everybody in our society, either they are whites or you are ruling class or poor people or African-American, Latino, Koreans, they are all part of it. They are all kind
yes.
of have responsibilities.
Yep.
We need to all work together to heal this.
Absolutely.
That's what you're trying to say.
I'll tell you this. We have affluent America. We have the so-called poor people in America. You know, that class issue. Affluent America believes that it is right because they're affluent, because they have money and everything, but it's not true. People say, be an upstanding, respectable citizen. Wear a tie. Go to work every day. That does not mean that you're an individual that has integrity and that you're a healthy, functioning human being. That does not mean that. If you have a suit and a tie and a nice car and a big house, that don't mean that. Just because you don't have a car, you sleep on the street, you know, doesn't mean that you're not a person that has integrity and that you're not an upstanding human being, you know. But we teach that in the culture, that the image of what it is, you know, at the root, you know, like, for instance, the mental, physical, and psychological abuse that people suffer, first of all, in their own households, you know, as children, that they never really come to terms with, in most cases, manifests itself as homicide in urban communities. In affluent neighborhoods, in Beverly Hills, Pacific Heights, Palisades, that same mental, physical, and psychological abuse that's suppressed manifests itself as suicide. It's the same wound. It's just the opposite side of the same coin. In most cases, in affluent neighborhoods, they hide behind money, because they can buy themselves out of situation. They can buy themselves out of not going into the newspaper. You know, they can cover it up with, you know, the abuse, with an inheritance, all kinds of stuff. You know what I'm saying? With their own societal rules. Whereas in urban neighborhoods, you know, it's all over the front lawn. But somehow in the culture, it's shifted. Because now, kids who grew up in affluent neighborhoods, they want to be from the ghetto. You know? Hip-hop culture has popularized and made, you know, poverty seem good, you know? And that's one thing that black folks have always been able to do, is been able to take straw and make brick, you know, to shift, you know, the whole, I mean, you know, cultural perception, but we don't control it. See, when we shift it, somebody else takes it and markets it and promotes it. You know what I'm saying? And makes it into something else. But it's the same wound. And, you know, we're no different.
My last question is, if you have anything you'd like to say about the early riots? It's your choice.
Yeah. I tell you, I think that the LA riot was a precursor to something else that hasn't happened yet within the culture. I think that this country is actually headed for a civil war. And I think that we are being totally emotionally desensitized to violence against one another. I think that we're being pitted against each other on a large scale. Because capitalism is an experiment, like communism, like socialism. They've successfully crashed both of those systems, the latter. I mean, you know, communism and socialism. Now capitalism is over, and they're ready for a new experiment. I believe that that those who you know, play the strings within this culture, they're going to collapse this whole economy. And they're going to create so many levels between them and where the so-called problem is, you know, that that before people even wake up to realize what's going on, you know, everything will be gone. You know, Enron, all of those things are just minor examples of what's going to happen, you know. Because those folks who play the strings, they're global citizens. They've created that term. Because literally, they can live anywhere in the world. And through technology, they can control everything. They orchestrate wars and all types of stuff. And as long as they keep blacks and Latinos fighting, as long as they keep blacks and Korean Americans fighting, you know, as long as they keep rich and poor fighting, like the whole presidential campaign with, you know, Kerry talking about, you know, the two Americas. I'm like, I thought that that was kind of like just so sick. I really did. Because I'm like, what two Americas are you talking about? But there's one America. You know, there's Goliath and his shadow. This is the shadow America, you know. And the folks who are controlling everything, they like to say that, you know, there's a middle class. You know, he's like, I'm for the middle class. What middle class? I'm like, middle class is a conceptual framework. It means that you have more material possessions, but your wounds are just as deep as the person that's so-called has nothing, as well as those who supposedly are rich that you're aspiring to. Middle class means that you're two paychecks from the street. Whereas poor means that you're living on the streets, basically. That you just, you're day to day. You know, I'm like this. Having a house, having a car and all of that stuff. Man, I'm like, you know, it makes it easier to transverse the culture, to go here and to go there and stuff like that. But it doesn't heal the wound and the life. You know, I think that the LA riot was a sign that unless we focus our energy and efforts on helping people to address the deep wounds within our own personal life, that we're going to see this whole country destroyed. And I think that, again, that, you know, that some people are looking forward to that. Because they're already stealing all of the money, draining all the money, privatizing Social Security. I mean, you know, this is, I mean, stupid stuff. You know, I mean, we're sending $87 billion over to Iraq, you know, to fight a war that we can never win. To instill democracy when we don't even practice democracy here. What? There was a coup in this country 4 years ago that people are trying to act like, you know, it didn't happen. I mean, it started with Ronald Reagan and all of that. I mean, people act like they don't remember that he got shot. They assassinated Kennedy. Coups happen in this country, too. But you know what? Our media is so powerful that they'll tell us it's something else and we'll believe it. Some of us believe it. You know, that's why I'm like, I'm not fooled. I'm not fooled by it, you know. And I'm like this. I have compassion for those officers. I do. Who beat Rodney King. I do. I have compassion for them because I'm like, somebody has to help them to address the wounds in their personal life. You know? I have compassion for Rodney King because I know that he has a deep wound. And that's why he's consistently in trouble. Because it's never been addressed. Giving him, awarding him $1 million and stuff, you know, you give an ignorant person $1 million and they're going to do more damage than they're going to actually do good. And I'm not saying that I've met Rodney King and everything and sit down and talk to him. And he ain't the, sharpest knife in the drawer, you know. I mean, he has some real issues, you know. But no one is really trying to help him to address those issues. You know, our legal system in this country is whack. You know, it's riddled with racism and old, outdated thoughts and ideas. The fact that a person can go to prison and serve time for a crime that they commit and not be able to come out and be reemployed is ridiculous to me. To me, I'm saying that if we elect politicians to do a job, then that would be one of the number one policy issues that needs to be addressed. Because an individual in this country is supposed to have the right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But when you deny a person the right to be able to sustain themselves, to feel like a man or a woman, to provide for their family, I'm like, you know, you're destroying the building blocks of this country.
You know, so. I want to talk to you more about, actually, let me ask one more question, really,
okay.
Real quick, because
okay.
I have to go.
All right,
already.
Okay.
I have an appointment at 12 o'clock, actually.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Well, so is there any community building among, you know, different races, Korean Americans, African Americans, Latinos, after the riots?
Yeah, there were quite a few community meetings after the riots that were organized by a lot of different groups. I mean, so there were a lot of dialogues and conversation that happened. They were political in nature, though. And not the conversations, but the motivation to do them were political so that someone can take credit for it and say that this is what I've organized and what I've done. So it wasn't really about trying to get to the heart of things. Because, see, that takes time. And that's something that, you know, that we ain't into in this culture. Everything has to happen now. You know what I'm saying? There's other countries that you go to around the world, you know, everything is inshallah. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you know, things take forever to happen. You know what I'm saying? But you know what? Things take so long because people spend a lot of time on, you know, trying to deal with the heart. In some cases, you know. But at the same time, I mean, the whole world, you know, and I've spoken, like I was in Indonesia and I was speaking with a lot of the, you know, brothers and sisters from over there. And, you know, they were saying pretty much that they suffer from the same thing. It's this code of silence. It's a taboo to speak about certain things, you know. And I was telling them that, you know, but they all idolize America because they've never been here. And they were thinking like, oh, you guys have it so great. It's free and everybody talks. I'm like, hey, who told you that? I'm like, don't believe that. I'm like, freedom of speech is just a word. You know, you can't really say anything. I'm like, you could say anything, but don't think that there won't be no consequences and repercussions behind it. You know, I'm like, it'll be distorted and all kinds of stuff. But yeah.